In the morning hours of July 31st, 1964, a craft hurtled through space on a collision course with the moon. If all went according to plan, this scientific bundle of instruments would abruptly end its long journey by smashing into the lunar surface. In Southern California, some quarter of a million miles away, engineers sent radio commands to the craft, which turned on a set of six television cameras aimed at the moon. A large crew of technicians then waited tensely and listened to the radio signals from that moon-bound spacecraft.
We are receiving pictures from the B-channel cameras. The quality cannot be determined at this point, but we are receiving pictures.
The cameras were working, and for some 17 minutes, thousands of pictures were being returned. Then, on schedule, the spacecraft reached its final destination.
Excellent signal strength. We're receiving pictures to the end. Impact has occurred. Impact has occurred.
The long mission was over. Ranger 7 had scored the most dramatic success of the 1964 space year. As a result, the road to the moon seemed just a little shorter. The National Aeronautics and Space Administration and this station present The Year in Space, a review of air and space activities for 1964. The year saw further advancements toward multiple manned flights into space. Early developmental work was completed on the Apollo spacecraft that will carry three astronauts to the moon and back. There were three successful firings of Saturn I, the early generation version of the rockets to boost that Apollo craft. And Project Gemini moved closer to the operational phase when two-man crews will take to space beginning in 1965. But for the U.S., 1964's main significance was in the field of the unmanned exploration of space. There were many major achievements. That flight of Ranger 7 was everything hoped for. The craft had been launched from Cape Kennedy on July 28th. It flew over 230,000 miles and zeroed in on the moving lunar target. Its cameras transmitted back over 4,000 lunar photographs of amazing clarity. Dr. Gerald Kuiper, an astronomer and member of the Ranger team, described both the pictures and the Ranger program.
I have never in my experience as a scientist seen a series of scientific documents where there is just a good selection of good quality pictures among a whole lot of indifferent pictures, but where literally every picture of the A and B series is of high quality. This program has had great difficulties in the past, but that is because it was a tremendously ambitious program, and I think all of these various difficult things which have been attempted have now been brought to a degree of perfection simultaneously, which has made this experiment really a model experiment for years to come. That every aspect, literally every aspect, from the ballistics, the mid-course maneuver, to the picture taking, everything has behaved according to the textbook, let us say. It was a textbook case, and I'm sure this case is making history.
In 1965, two more flights of Ranger spacecraft are scheduled to gain further information about the lunar surface to pave the way for the day when astronauts will journey moonward. Another long space mission began in 1964. On November 28th, a Mariner 4 spacecraft was sent on a distant trip to the planet Mars. A few weeks before, Mariner 3 attempted to lead the way toward the mysterious red planet. The shroud which protects the spacecraft during launch failed to jettison completely. As a result, Mariner 3 could not deploy its solar panels, and its battery power was lost. Mariner 4's beginning was more successful, and it is now well on its 350 million mile way. Mariner, like the Ranger program, is managed for NASA by the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in California. There, Wilbur Collier is the assistant Mariner Mars project manager.
The Mars mission objectives are to explore interplanetary space between Earth and Mars and to validate new engineering techniques that will be used for the first time in the mission. The density of the Mars atmosphere is much thinner than ours at Earth, and one of the important objectives of this Mars mission is to learn more about this density so that we can successfully in the future land capsules on this planet.
If all goes according to plan, Mariner will pass by Mars at 8:11 p.m. on July 14th, and a television camera and scientific measuring instruments will attempt their investigation. Three developmental communication satellites were launched by NASA last year. A passive balloon-type craft, Echo 2, the medium-altitude active communicator, Relay 2, and the high-flying SINCOM 3, which in its orbit appears to hover at one point above the Earth at all times. One of the first images and voices seen and heard over SINCOM was that of President Lyndon Johnson. His recorded greetings came from Japan before the Tokyo Olympic Games began in September. Portions of the Olympic Games were televised live over SINCOM.
This amazing satellite and the facilities in Japan and in the United States, which make its operation possible, are the product of vision and inventiveness of our scientific communities, both the private and government. I welcome the opportunity to applaud this latest triumph in the application of science to the field of communication.
The technology and know-how gained from SINCOM and from other experimental communicators are being used in developing the operational World Communication Satellite System, a system which will have the effect of bringing the distant corners of the world closer together. And the world will soon benefit from another type of space servant, an operational weather satellite system. These sounds are the radio signals sent back from an experimental weather watcher launched by NASA in the summer of 1964. This satellite is called Nimbus. At the Goddard Space Flight Center in Maryland, Nimbus project manager Harry Press explains its operation.
Nimbus is a large, Earth-stabilized, and very amply powered satellite. It weighs some 830 pounds. It can carry a wide array of meteorological instruments for studying and measuring meteorological phenomena on Earth.
For nearly a month, Nimbus's cameras kept a 24-hour-a-day weather eye on the world below, transmitting high-quality day and night pictures of cloud cover, storms, and hurricanes. Pictures enabling weathermen to give earlier and more accurate forecasts of upcoming conditions. Nimbus's unique camera systems and several other of its components will be used in an upcoming series of Tyros satellites soon to provide a new system of weather detection. Here is another sound from space. This telemetry is from one of a number of scientific satellites placed into orbit to chart space and atmospheric environment. From these high-flying laboratories is coming a better understanding of our earthly living and how it is affected by space phenomena. Edgar Courtwright from NASA's Office of Space Sciences and Applications tells about one major achievement in 1964.
The highlight of the year probably was the launching of the Orbiting Geophysical Observatory. OGO, as we call it, weighs about 1,000 pounds and carries 20 experiments. The OGO was designed to explore the magnetosphere, which is nothing more than the region dominated by the Earth's magnetic field and the energetic particles which are trapped in that field. These particles are commonly referred to as the Van Allen belt.
One area in our upper atmosphere that scientists have long been interested in investigating is the ionosphere. This region, which begins about 40 miles up, acts as a huge electrified mirror to reflect radio signals from one earthly location to another. NASA's sounding rockets vertically probe the ionosphere, but only orbiting satellites are able to get continuous measurements. In 1964, a number of ionospheric investigating satellites was launched. Here are the telemetry or radio signals sent from one of these. These are from the Ariel 2 satellite, which was launched last spring. Ariel is another example of international space cooperation. There are now over 60 nations cooperating in the scientific exploration of space. With Ariel, Great Britain provided the experiments while NASA built the spacecraft and launched it. On December 15th, a San Marco scientific satellite, designed and built in Italy, was launched from NASA's Wallops Island station by Italian personnel.
700 megawatts, all down, personal, zeroing the bad.
1964 saw significant advances in the development of various power systems for future spaceflight. In late summer, big steps toward a nuclear rocket engine were taken. Three successful firings of prototypes of nuclear rocket reactors were conducted at Jackass Flats in Nevada. In long-distance ventures into space, present-day chemical propellant systems will not be adequate. Nuclear power holds promise of the answer. Harold Finger is the manager of the Joint Atomic Energy Commission and NASA Space Nuclear Propulsion Office. After one of those nuclear reactor tests, Mr. Finger discussed its significance.
Now, this high performance means that instead of having to build heavier and heavier rockets to do more and more advanced space missions and travel further in space, we can now use these more efficient systems and deliver much more payload with a given size rocket than we could with conventional chemical systems. This will give us the capability to do many missions beyond the first manned lunar landings that are to be done in the Apollo program than would be possible if we only had the chemical rocket systems. The nuclear propulsion will provide us with the capability to go almost anywhere in space.
Another important first in 1964 was the operation in spaceflight of an electrostatic or ion engine. This type of engine will run much longer on far less fuel than present rocket engines. There were also two successful flight tests of the Centaur rocket, which uses the high-energy fuel liquid hydrogen. The upper stages of the Saturn moon rocket will be propelled by a liquid hydrogen, liquid oxygen combination.
Five, four, three, two, one.
It was on April 8th that Project Gemini, our second manned space program, was formally inaugurated. From Cape Kennedy, a Titan II rocket boosted a replica of the Gemini spacecraft into an Earth orbit. All systems worked perfectly, proving the compatibility of the craft with the vehicle. One more unmanned flight is to follow, and then the first of 10 Earth orbital Gemini missions staffed with two-man teams of astronauts. 5 days after that April Gemini test, Dr. Robert Gilruth, the director of NASA's Manned Spacecraft Center in Houston, made an announcement.
I'd like to start by introducing the prime and backup crews for the first manned Gemini flight. The prime crew will consist of Virgil I. Grissom, command pilot, and John W. Young, second pilot. In the backup crew, Walter M. Schirra, command pilot, and Tom P. Stafford, second pilot.
This was the crew assigned for the first manned Gemini mission, a flight of up to three orbits of the Earth, and now scheduled for early spring 1965. After Dr. Gilruth's announcement of their selection, astronauts Grissom and Young commented.
Of course, I'm very happy to be assigned to the first flight, and it's a real honor to be chosen to fly the very first one. John, would you like to say something?
I can echo what you said, Gus. It's a real pleasure to be assigned for the first flight. We got a lot of hard work ahead of us, and I'm sure it's going to be extremely fascinating, extremely interesting. We'll do our best.
During 1964, there was more than a score of flights with the research rocket plane, the X-15. This marked the fifth year of problem-solving missions by this high-speed, high-altitude flying test craft. NASA also continued aeronautical research on the supersonic jet transport and on vertical rising aircraft. For the year, NASA attempted 32 major satellite launchings, or booster rocket tests. Of these, 28 were successful, to give the space agency its best record yet. The last satellite of the year, an explorer of the Earth's radiation belts, was launched successfully from Cape Kennedy on December 21st. The year 1964 saw many achievements in the unmanned scientific exploration of space. It also moved us closer to operational world weather and communication satellite systems. And important preliminary steps toward the manned Gemini and Apollo missions were taken. Missions that will once again send Americans outward on their most challenging venture yet. The conquest of our vast space frontier. This has been The Year in Space, a report on air and space activities during 1964. This program has been presented by this station and NASA, the National Aeronautics and Space Administration. This is Willard Scott speaking.